Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
It's time for Microbrew Emergency Podcast Edition. My name is J.R. Radcliffe from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I am joined by my colleague and Brewers beat reporter, Kurt Hoge. It is trade season here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And on December 13th, the first big trade of the offseason, for at least involving the Milwaukee Brewers, has been consummated. Devin Williams, closer, outstanding pitcher for the Brewers, former Rookie of the Year, two-time Fireman of the Year, or whatever we're calling the Reliever of the Year award. I believe it's named after Trevor Hoffman, I think. He's gone. He's going to the New York Yankees. And coming back to the Brewers in the exchange is some cash, which we'll actually probably talk about. Nestor Cortez, starting pitcher, former All-Star pitcher, who will be in his last year before free agency, so potentially a rental, but a starting pitcher. And also a second base prospect named Caleb Durbin, who we will talk about as well. Kurt, we suspected, I guess I was more leaning toward Devin Williams not getting traded this offseason based on the relief market, based on the dollar amounts that it seemed like relief was in demand, but it also felt like there were enough options out there that teams could go that route rather than trade for somebody like Devin Williams. On the other hand, the Yankees are a team that believes themselves to be a championship contender, and Devin Williams is a championship level closer. So this fit makes sense. We'll just start with the carte blanche here. What do you think about it? What are your thoughts as this trade rolled in on Wednesday after, or what day is it? Friday afternoon.
Yeah. I think as unsurprising of a big deal as you can get, in like the context that we're in, the
really?
Yankees were
a name. I'm a little surprised.
Well, I mean, in fact, okay, the totality of it, right? Like, the return is unsurprising. The team he was sent to is unsurprising. The fact that he was traded was unsurprising. I mean, like, I know we talked on here about, like, I wouldn't guarantee they trade him, and that was, I think that was the right thing to think, along with where the Brewers were standing at that time. But as the offseason began and it progressed, it did become more and more clear that these guys have very little money to operate with this winter. Yeah. And like, there's going to be some teams, some big market teams that are going to be, I don't want to say desperate, but like really, really interested in acquiring an elite closer rather than paying one of the other guys. So in those facets, yeah, this is pretty unsurprising. Obviously, like, there's a bit of a bombshell feel whenever you trade a Devin Williams or Corbin Burns or Josh Hader. But by this point, the shock of that, it feels like it's worn off. I feel like, for the most part, like, Brewers fans are probably pretty conditioned to accept that this is the reality that, like, their front offices and their ownership's going to operate under. And, like, not a bad thing, not a good thing. I mean, I guess you could spin it either way, but that's just the reality. So I'm not totally surprised by any of it. I guess if you are surprised, that's fair too. They did just trade a top three relief pitcher in baseball away. So there's going to be some like whoa effects to that.
This is not the first time the Brewers have traded a player whose lasting memory will be a kind of gut punch of a playoff moment. You know, Trent Grisham drops that ball in 2019 in the wild card game, or drops is the wrong word, but poorly fields an outfield ball that allows the Nationals to take the lead. He's traded in the offseason. Devin Williams allows a home run to Pete Alonso that changed their fortunes in game three of the wild card series, and now he is dealt in the offseason. It was a bit of a star-crossed season for Williams because he had missed the first 4 months with a back injury. And he came back, and I thought he looked really good. You know, he certainly was good in game two of the wild card series, when I think it took 10 pitches to get three outs, three very tough outs. But it wasn't quite the same in game three. I think we're talking about a guy who's still at that level, right? We're still talking about a guy that you have to imagine is one of the best closers in baseball. There's no, like, clear sign of depreciation here, right?
No, the changeup's still an elite pitch. It's what he does works, and I don't think that one outcome in one very bad outcome from the Brewers in a playoff game is gonna change that at all. And the other thing, one thing about this trade is like, I feel like when we were talking about this in the past, we said prepare to be underwhelmed by the return compared to like what you're expecting. I feel like they actually ended up doing pretty well in that regard.
Interesting.
We can get into the guys. I mean, like getting Nestor Cortez is probably more valuable to the Brewers than Devin Williams. Based on what you would expect from them on past production, that and what the team needs are. Now, like you're running a real risk when you are removing such a known quantity at closer, because like that's just there's just fire that you're playing with there. But the Brewers are, as we all know, well positioned in that side of the pitching staff. They operated just fine without Devin Williams for 4 months last year. They have a lot of different options that they can throw at this ninth inning spot, and they'll probably be just fine in the bullpen. Whereas the starting rotation, assuming they keep Nestor Cortez, let's throw that caveat in there too. The Brewers now have a final year of arbitration eligible starting pitcher. And they like to trade those guys too. So I'm not sure the Nestor Cortez market is like thriving. It is going to be something the Brewers like super want to explore, but like, assuming they keep Nestor Cortez, that's a much greater hole that has been filled than the one that is left, is what I'm saying, given what you have on the roster. You look at that rotation now and you probably feel a little to a lot better having like two known quantities, and then if Brandon Woodruff is actually healthy, you have three really good known quantities that have been all-stars in the recent past.
Yeah, so obviously we need to talk about the return. Probably come back to talking about Devin himself a little bit shortly. Nestor Cortez just turned 30 years old on Tuesday, December 10th. Happy birthday, Nestor. You are 4 days younger than Giannis Antetokounmpo. And he was an all-star, as you mentioned, back in 2022. He was very good. Very good that season. Ended up with a 2.44 ERA over 28 starts. Excellent work. Did get some Cy Young votes. 2023 was a totally different story and a bit of a disaster. His ERA was almost 4.97. He had a whip over 1.2, which isn't terrible, but it wasn't anywhere near where he had been when he had a whip under 1. Then he bounced back in 2024. He had a losing record, but 3.77 ERA, not bad. 1.15 whip, not bad for a starter. He made 31 starts. You know, he's 2023, he didn't make that many starts. He was only able to get to 12. So that was part of, I think, maybe why the season didn't go well for him. So when he's healthy, he's been really good. Now, just said, he's 30 years old. He is going to be a free agent. This is a rental, but it's a left-handed option in the rotation. They have a fair number of options. I don't know if they have another number of studs, but Cortez is probably going, right now, at this moment, you would say he's probably their number two starter behind Freddy Peralta, you know, unless Brandon Woodruff is magically healthy. Go ahead.
The Brandon Woodruff questions, obviously, but like, This is a good profile for the Brewers. I think it's going to be funny that, of course, this trade is going to be talked about as the Devin Williams trade for the Yankees. Like, that is what is going to be the headline. The biggest market in baseball after missing out on Soto is, they're getting one of the best closers in baseball. And like, sure. But I also think that within that is where you see an opportunity for like the Brewers to do what the Brewers do. While all the attention is on that side of things, like Nestor Cortez is going to be looked at as like the odd man out in New York, the guy who is going to get shipped off. Oh, he gave up the homer to Freddie Freeman. Like his time in New York was clearly done. He was on the outs. What a deal for the Yankees, which like, sure. But that's where the Brewers operate, is like Nestor Cortez was still worth three wins just about last year. So like this, that's where it feels like a good deal for the Brewers to me, is while all the attention will be on what the Yankees got and how they didn't give up much. Like, actually, they did. This is a good deal for them, but like Nestor Cortez for sure. That's an arm that I think the Brewers will be really excited to get. Again, assuming he remains with them in front of their pitching staff and their coaches, and they'll try to get the most out of him for sure. I think the interesting name though here is Caleb Durbin. Like, that's the guy people don't know maybe a ton about. And when, you know, when a prospect comes over, that's always the name to look into and pay attention to and talk about as well.
Okay, well, let's talk about him. He is teeny tiny. He's 5'6". He's between him and Luis Lara, they could form two of the shortest big leaguers if Lara is able to get here in the Caleb Durbin era. Struggling not to call him Durden. Like, it rings like Tyler Durden in my head, the character from Fight Club. I have a feeling I'm going to be mixing that up a lot for some reason. But Caleb Durbin, 5'6", second baseman. He was sent to the Arizona Fall League. So the Yankees, I think, really regarded him as somebody who could be maybe they're even their everyday second baseman or at least a member of the big league roster in 2025, but he doesn't have big league experience. He is okay. If you look at his numbers, like, he's not regarded as one of the top prospects in their organization, but he does have good speed. It seems like he's there more for bat of his bad, but like that he can, you know, he can hit the ball. He makes contact the way that Bryce Turang makes contact, in that he doesn't hit the ball all that hard, probably harder than Bryce Turang, but still.
No.
sorry to ruin
your tangent there, but no.
We're talking about another guy who ain't going to hit the ball that hard. And the Brewers already got one of those. So I don't know if this is a signal that Bryce is going to shortstop or what we're going to see here. I don't know.
It is such a Brewers acquisition. Like, it's such a Brewers profile. The speed and the defense is really what you're talking about here. Like, there's not, I mean, he hit 10 homers in AAA, because he does elevate the ball a little bit, but there's like no power there. He draws some walks. He doesn't really strike out. It seems like a little different version of Nick Madrigal. And Nick Madrigal didn't really work out in the big leagues. Now maybe the speed and the defense and the utility is like, provides more value, but I'm not like slating him in to be an opening day infielder. I think it helps the infield equation, but I would suspect the Brewers are not done in their infield acquisitions this offseason. Like, I would not feel very great about the infield as is going into the new season. Like, just assuming Caleb Durbin can be the everyday second baseman or third baseman, or wherever they, you know, see him best fit.
So you do like this return though. You think this is a pretty decent get. And I know we're talking about 1 year of a relief pitcher. So we should you think it's fair. Primarily, I guess I would think it's fair primarily because you could have just flipped a soon to be free agent relief pitcher for a soon to be starting pitcher for this next year. And I think that probably has more value the way the Brewers are currently constructed, especially because they have high leverage relievers kind of coming out of their ears at this point and could probably make more. That seems to be their specialty. So that makes some sense. But honestly, I don't even know what to make of Caleb Durbin. Like, I don't know if I see that as really part of the equation when I'm thinking, is this trade going to be really good? I don't think of him as a guy who's going to be like even a Robert Gasser level prospect who could be something pretty nice down the road. This guy feels like
Yeah. It's different than that Hader trade when the Brewers got Robert Gasser back, which again, like, makes the return look like, you see why they did it. They're getting Rodgers for the rest of the year to theoretically like be a Josh Hader type. And then you had Robert Gasser in there as well, who legitimately profiled as like a number four starter at the time and then got a little bit better too with the Brewers. And then Astudillo Ruiz, who I did not understand at the time. I was like, what are they doing here? This guy,
that's okay. They flipped him for one of the best player at his position in baseball. That was really well done.
And yeah, they justified it there. So like, that was a good return. This is, I think, a very fair return. Like, being able to get a big league starter who is like, I don't want to call Cortez a reclamation project because he was pretty good last year, but it feels like the perception of him is sort of that he's like a really good, like an already good reclamation project, which is kind of up the Brewers' alley. And then, like, Caleb Durbin just fits the roster. He's going to be able to play a lot of different spots. And, like, if you have, like, a Tyler Black on your team, that helps just make the roster, like, work better, because now you've, you know, he's, like, sort of pigeonholed into a spot or maybe two spots. But Durbin can play everywhere, and that's sort of, as we know, how this roster gets put together.
Yeah. I think I might have been a little unfair to Tobias Myers just saying, oh, Nestor Cortez is probably the number two pitcher. I guess I don't know. I'm still curious to see how the career arc plays out.
He's a little more proven than Tobias Myers.
He is. Yeah, for sure. Of course.
Myers was great, but I think, like, it would the best way to put it is it would be unfair to expect him to do that again.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. I think the rotation is a little bit more interesting now. I still don't necessarily say, I don't think the Brewers have a great rotation by any means, but you've got Peralta, Cortez, and Myers that I think are pretty solidified. And then it becomes, let's assume Aaron Ashby is not going to go back into the starting rotation. You've got Aaron Civale. We've talked about, we're not positive he's here when opening day rolls around, but he could be. You still have DL Hall, who's going to be entering probably back into the starters equation. And you got a couple maybes. You know, you've got, obviously, Brandon Woodruff is a big, big maybe, but you've got, you know, what's up with Carlos Rodriguez? Do they, are they going to maybe try to have Logan Henderson, you know, be on an accelerated timeline and get to the big leagues awful quickly? Like, there are now, at least you could see how they can get through the season. I wasn't sure how they were going to get through the season going into 2024. And obviously they pulled it off very well, but this does feel like it equips them pretty well. You think, like, what do you think about Aaron Civale? I mean, how where do you fall in terms of, do you think that they're going to move him at this point now that they maybe have one more option for that rotation?
Yeah, I think they will try. I would absolutely try to move him as well. Like, nothing against Aaron Civale, but that is the sort of, like, league average arm that the Brewers seem to be able to grow on trees.
Yeah.
I don't think the return, though, is just, look, it all depends on what you're willing to pay, because the return's not going to be super incredible, but you could get something for the $8 million and then use that money elsewhere. Like, if this is a zero-sum game and you can't go above this certain threshold of money, like, that $8 million is valuable allocated in a different area, as opposed to on your number five starter, who is really no different than, like, I mean, DL Hall and Aaron Ashby give you a much higher ceiling. And the Brewers grow league average arms and, like, get them on trees and they get the most out of guys. So
yeah,
that would make a lot of sense. But you could also do worse than, like, 140 innings of Aaron Civale, basically, like, a different, you know, Colin Ray, but in a different, actually, no, the exact same package, yeah, pretty much. I don't know. We'll see. We will see. The way starting pitching is booming right now, $8 million for him seems like a pretty decent price for someone to pay.
Yeah. This is one of the questions that always gets asked every spring that I think is this inane, stupid question that doesn't really need to be answered right away, is who's going to close for you? You know, like, who's your closer if you don't have a quote unquote proven closer like Devin Williams going into the year? But, you know, we could ask it. I think Trevor McGill is the obvious guy who trickles down.
Sure.
He was so high leverage. I think they could probably go a little by committee the way they did when Williams was out. Mostly McGill, but, you know, maybe not. Maybe it's a left-hander or something. I don't know if you have any other thoughts, if it's just as simple as just drop Trevor McGill down and let that man cook.
Pretty much, yeah. That's the plan. The bullpen's really deep, really deep. And Trevor McGill did it for this specific job for a while last year. And, like, there's other guys who could, but I quite honestly don't feel good about any of them being the guy.
Yeah.
That's not the super great barometer other than vibes and gut. But as you know, vibes and gut is what matters here.
We are merchants of vibes and gut.
Love the gut. And you need the gut. You need the gut.
I have so much.
It's nice.
So much gut. I have so much gut.
So much gut here. Pool boy or
priest? Priest or pool boy? Sleeper pick for a closer in 2025, Kurt. Brandon Woodruff.
No one wants my answer, except it's Craig Yoho.
Please bring us Craig Yoho. Why?
Actually, my actual answer is Aaron Ashby.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's good. But you know what?
He could really let it eat.
Obviously Josh Hader was kind of one of one, but like I always feel like it's a wasted opportunity to have a left-hander be a closer because you could use him in higher leverage spots with more left-handers. Like, why relegate him to the ninth inning? Sure, I mean, they shouldn't relegate anyone to the ninth inning. But yeah. I'm always like, don't you use him where he's best.
I know, but like in my mind, I know they're gonna try a Mets starter, but like I just see a really successful world for the Brewers and Ashby where they just let him eat for an inning. And he's got the stuff to get lefties and righties out. So why not try? Although maybe he still is better against lefties because that sinker is his primary fastball.
Bring Craig Yoho to the majors.
Craig Yoho.
The new Devin Williams.
Hey,
bring him to
the majors. This is one fewer name in front of Craig Yoho on the depth chart.
However, we have a new name in front of Craig Yoho on the depth chart because the Brewers made a pick in the Rule 5 draft. We'll touch on this real quick. I do want to come back to Devin Williams a little bit, but Connor Thomas, formerly of the St. Louis Cardinals, left-hander, was taken in the Rule 5 draft. Now, the Brewers have taken a Rule 5 guy not that long ago. A couple years ago, they had Gus Varland. What was that, 2021?
2022, the Gus bus. Bring him home. The White Sox don't need him. Get him on a bus to Milwaukee. He could be the closer. I'm not even joking.
You bring love Gus Varland. Have always loved him.
Gus Varland. We did like my top five like favorite just guys in the clubhouse, and Gus Varland was for sure in the top five.
Yeah. Are we sure it's 2022? Was it 2023 for Varland?
You're right. It was 2023. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he made his big league debut the same day Bryce Terang made his major league debut in Chicago.
Correct. I think it was opening day. Yeah. Opening day.
Yeah. Anyway, the Brewers have done this before. Gus Varland did not last long because Rule 5 draft picks, for most people know this, they have to stay on the big league roster all season long, or the team has to return them to the previous club. Teams can work out, you know, financial deals if they want.
You want to just a little nugget on that?
Tell me.
The manager at that time was not a particularly huge fan of having a Rule 5 pick in his bullpen because it just gave them it gives you less flexibility and you can't option him back and forth. And, Varland was one of the front office's guys. Like, they really like the stuff and you can kind of, it's not really hard to tell why, but, after he gave up 10, 11 runs to the Cardinals in a game at Busch Stadium, like, it was really bad. He didn't get out of the inning. I don't think it was one of the roughest innings to watch I've ever seen in baseball. And at that point, the manager just went out. The front office had to face the music and say, okay. Yeah. We'll get rid of this guy.
I'm trying to think of one of the toughest innings I've seen. And I can't even remember his name. He's with the Pirates now. He was with the Brewers.
Cam View.
Who?
Cam View, that was his name, right? Cam View.
No, I don't know what that is.
Cam View.
Anyway, I've seen some tough innings.
Cam View was his name.
Cam View. I don't even know who we're talking. That's a name you've made up. I've never heard that name before.
Derek Shelton left him in there. We're talking about the exact same thing.
Okay.
Derek Shelton left Cam View in there for like 60 pitches in one inning when he was giving up like 10 runs, 11 runs to the Brewers.
God, the name has just been scrubbed from my brain. That's wild.
It's like how I'm seeing you right now as we record this through a cam
on
view.
Cam View. Yeah, I remember being very bad. But also there's a left-hander for the Brewers whose name I'm also blanking on, who was just here last year, 2024. Clayton Andrews. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Clayton Andrews. You don't deserve it, but we'll finish with one of the worst lines in Brewers history, career lines in Brewers history. So maybe with a different manager, there's more openness to the lack of flexibility that comes with having a Rule 5 guy in the bullpen. I will say it's kind of an interesting move because they've got bullpen guys, and yes, they can option them back and
forth.
They
do, but yeah, they do have optionable bullpen guys, especially without Devin in there now. Like, the certainties are McGill, Hudson, Hyams, Koenig. Grant Wolfram has options, right? Mears.
I would think so. Mears, yes.
Those are the five certainties, assuming health. I don't know if Peguero used his last option here, but he's certainly not a certainty. Certainly not a certainty. Wow, way to really mix up the words there, Kurt. But like the rest of the bullpen depth chart. Abner, optionable. Bukauskas, he still has that fourth option here because he spent all year on the injured list, the big league injured list. Wolfram, theoretically optionable. Connor Thomas, well, that's the guy we're talking about here. Davy Garcia, not optionable if you call him up. Craig Yoho would be optionable. Hall and Grant Ashby. Hudson? One of Hall or Ashby has to be in the bullpen now, so that's actually optionable, but I don't think they would be optioned if they were in the, like, if they're healthy, they're pitching in the big leagues this year. So
I'm not sure like that.
Oh, really?
I could see them optioning Hall. I could see them optioning Ashby, you know, like they'll do whatever it takes to make this work for them where they can keep maximum depth. So I could see that.
Well,
I could see more with Hall than Ashby.
I think they burned that last option here for DL Hall.
Oh, well, then there goes that. He will not be optioned.
Sure, you could start it. Like, if you really want Aaron Ashby to be a starter, you could put him in AAA, but you're doing a disservice to your big league team if you're not just giving him important innings out of the bullpen.
Oh, well, they have no problem with that. Brian Hudson was in the minors last year. They have no problem with that.
Oh, my goodness.
That's right. I'm going to pull that. I'm not pulling punches.
Hey, well, I mean, that's okay. That is relevant to the topic at hand.
Yeah, they have no problem putting one of their best relievers in the minors.
That
even if he's slipping a little bit, I know he was slipping a little bit, but dang, that was cold.
Let's talk about that, but not necessarily like that decision so much as the ramifications on the big league club. It was not a well-received move in the clubhouse, in the bullpen, particularly with one guy that was just traded to the Yankees, JR.
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
It didn't – optioning Hudson, I think we've talked about this ad nauseum, but on its face, at the surface, it was not a move that sat well with Williams, who, like, as we've talked about, is – a super fierce competitor, all about winning. And when you send down the guy with he's been your best reliever all year, no matter what your reasoning for it is, like, that is something that was not particularly like super well received by Williams as well as other members of the team and the bullpen. Now, ultimately, did it really like matter on the field and on the performance? No. Was it a reason they traded Devin Williams? No, but like these frustrations were voiced to the front office, to the coaching staff that, like, I mean, he even voiced it a little bit. He kind of danced around it in some interviews with us. But like real frustration was voiced to members of the front office over the optioning of Hudson. And obviously it didn't really change anything. The Brewers had their reasoning, like the sides came to just move on. But that didn't mean that, like, it was it became viewed in a different light in the clubhouse. And so, again, does this matter in terms of wins and losses? Maybe not. I don't know. This is a team that talks a lot about clubhouse chemistry and whatnot. But not a popular move for former Brewers closer Devin Williams to in his mind to have Brian Hudson sent down. He was the most vocal, very frustrated about that.
At the time, and I can't put myself back in that exact moment knowing what their roster situation was, but I remember thinking the Brewers were probably not accustomed to being in that position where they just had a lot of guys who either couldn't be optioned or were just so important that you couldn't, you know, like you couldn't option Trevor McGill. You couldn't option even Jared Koenig, who had kind of worked his way ahead of Hudson. I don't, not really on the depth chart in terms of, because I think Hudson was more a different pitcher. He was higher leverage, maybe multiple innings. Koenig was kind of the left-hander you always used in situations that called for a left-hander. They got into a situation where there weren't a lot of obvious options. So at the time, I guess it made sense because they needed somebody to go down to do, I forget exactly which roster move triggered this, but when they didn't bring him back, that got weird for me. You know, like, I understand that they see him in his AAA outings. They understand that he may not, you know, something might not be performing that you can trust it at the big league level. But I still am stunned that they didn't put him on the playoff roster. Like, that just, that just blows my mind. You know, I get that the raw numbers don't tell you everything, but you got a reliever with a 1.73 ERA in 62 innings. Like, that's pretty remarkable. A lot of that coming from the first half of the season when he was otherworldly, of course. But do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this. Oh, good.
I mean, I was going to ask about Devin if you think that if that's why he had to be traded, not because circumstances called for it.
No, I mean, like, look, the relationship between Williams and the Brewers was, I don't know if contentious or rocky is like the exact right word, but something along those lines. Like, there were some definite bumps in the road. The back injury, frankly, was handled very, like, the handling of that whole thing was very peculiar. How the Brewers doctors and staff, like, they read the same MRI that Williams sent in his camp sent to a spine specialist in Los Angeles, and the same MRI, and it was read very differently. And the Brewers essentially were like suggesting rest for Devin Williams. Just don't throw for a little bit and you'll be fine. And the specialist like, no, you had stress fractures and you need to get surgery on those and miss 4 months, which is obviously suboptimal. So like that was obviously a rift in like the, I don't want to say the relationship, but that just is going to cause frustration from a player side for sure. And like, look, there's other stuff that happened throughout this tenure as well. While Williams was maybe the best relief pitcher in baseball or one of the top three or five in the last, what, 5-6 years, like, obviously there's the punching the wall incident, breaking his hand before the playoffs. The Brewers certainly used that in negotiations and as, like, I don't want to say as leverage, but like as that was hanging over the top of some of these arbitration and other sorts of negotiations. Like, they were very close to going to arbitration last year. Very, very close. But Devin Williams is the guy like that. You think about him and like his competitive nature, he has no problem going to arbitration, but I wouldn't want, like, it's just not a good situation if these sides go to arbitration and then you know they're going to bring up the breaking the hand incident. You know it. So ultimately they were able to settle, but like those arbitration negotiations were not super duper like all flowers and sunshine and rainbows. Toward the very end, they came to an agreement for multiple years, but yeah, I'm trying to think of what the Hader trade. Remember how Williams reacted to the Hader trade? That's
right.
That certainly set him off. Really, really, really bothered him among other players in the clubhouse too. But like, he was pissed off that they did that. And like, even in, so before you get to arbitration, obviously you're on a league minimum salary, but as you have service time, you generally receive a salary that is above league minimum by, you know, you get a bit of a pay raise essentially for having service time, maybe a little bit based on performance as well. Like a Bryce Terang will get a tick up this year for being in the big leagues for 2 years and winning a gold glove and whatnot. But when the CBA was renegotiated in 2021, before the 2022 season, and the league minimum salary went up, the Brewers effectively like did not give Williams the same level of raise, like percentage wise relative to what the league minimum went up when it went from like 550 to 700. So like what the salary he played on effectively was like lower than what he had been at the year before, although it was more money, like the percentage above the league minimum was less, if that makes sense. So like, yeah, just a lot of little things, sometimes big things like the wall incident and Hader, but ultimately what mattered was he was incredible on the field and took the ball whenever asked and sometimes you know, in different roles and situations and like multiple innings. It's really unfortunate that it ended the way it did in that inning, that ninth inning against the Mets and Pete Alonso. But that's the game sometimes, and the best players don't always come out on top.
Yeah, and someone else made this point that I thought was, I don't know if this is something you could back up with data, but I thought it was interesting. Relief pitchers in the postseason really struggled this year. And that might just be an aberration, but it also, to me, highlights that, you know, when you're talking about a max effort guy, who, any reliever, not Devin Williams, but a max effort guy who throws like two pitches perhaps, and you're seeing that guy multiple times over the course of a series, a lot of high leverage, you know, same guys are coming out for these high leverage spots, game one, game two, game three, a little bit easier to maybe line those guys up and hit those guys. And maybe it's just not, you know, we talked about the Brewers bullpen being the thing that would win for them in the playoffs. And while that is true, if you're seeing the same guys over and over, you're likely to get a good read on them. And not that that speaks to Devin's situation necessarily exactly, but it's relief pitchers just aren't as valuable when you get to the postseason. You could argue, following that line of logic, like you get into the game seven and you're trotting out the closer that's also pitched in game five, game four, game two. Are you getting the same level of effectiveness? And in some cases you might be. Again, I don't know.
But you're probably not. You're probably not. I mean, there's a reason these guys don't throw five or six games in the regular season. You can do it in the postseason for sure. But yeah, your recovery just is not going to be the same, especially after pitching for the last 6-7 months. It's actually, I mean, one of the things we thought though from Williams after missing 4 months is he'd be like fresher and that'd be better for the playoffs. And sometimes, you know what? Things happen. Hard to draw. It's like we can use the postseason to draw like grander conclusions about baseball every single year. And that's probably one that we would draw from this year is like, oh, I don't really like, what about these elite relievers in the playoffs? And like Luke Weaver ran out of gas in the World Series. So I don't know. I just think he had a really bad outing where he could not spot the changeup, and when you can't spot the changeup, then he needs to spot the fastball, and he couldn't really do that super well either.
Yeah. My interpretation of him, fiery guy sort of demands that other people, you know, like he wants to win so badly, and he sort of demands that the people that he's working with want to win so badly. And when there are, you know, conflicts with the organization, it's because he doesn't feel like they are committing to that one single goal, which is like purely to win, you know, like that there's, when there's anything superfluous, he gets a little agitated, I would say.
I think it's a guy who like wants his team to spend money, which is kind of like the fans in some ways. So
absolutely.
Honestly, I'm like really excited and interested to see how Devin Williams, you know, how New York goes for him, because he's a guy that like, he is one of the best closers in baseball, and getting to pitch in that market on that team. I'm just interested to see like if he has a great year, how he's viewed going into his walk year. Like there's a chance for a lot of money here. But it's also a different job than being the closer in Milwaukee. It just is. You've got more reporters, you've got more media, you've got frankly like a different media climate. We can be honest about that as well. It's not you blow a game, it's not three reporters at your locker. It's
Mike 20, Francesa 20. Isn't talking about you the next day on radio here in Milwaukee, but in New York.
Right. They'll rip. That's part of it too. They will rip. And it's an interesting opportunity for him, like personally, professionally. So that'll just be a fun storyline to watch. But ultimately, I think the Brewers did just fine here.
Yeah. What a tremendous story for the player development side. Now he started in the organization in 2013. So we're talking about many different scouting directors and people over the course of the years, but you know, he was a second round pick in a year they did not have a first round pick. His numbers weren't special. It didn't look like he was necessarily about to be a star. Missed all of 2017 with an injury. And then 2018, it wasn't immediately successful out of the gate, but slowly but surely he turned himself into what he is and was really good at Biloxi. They called him up, 2020, that COVID shortened season, his first full season, if you want to call that a full season, absolutely mind-bogglingly dominant, wins rookie of the year, and has been really good ever since. So a great story from the organization, and they got a lot for him. I mean, he was tremendous for them, won them a lot of games, closed down a ton of games, a lot of tight situations too, and the Brewers, you know, now they will look to move forward. One last thought, unrelated, well, sort of related to the Rule 5 thing that we talked about. The White Sox made Shane Smith the number one pick in the Rule 5 draft. That is a former Brewers prospect now. He wasn't a guy that I was necessarily thinking about as a must add to the 40-man roster at any point. I know his name came up as a guy who shows well enough to be someone who they could have protected on the 40-man roster. I think it would not give me pause under normal circumstances, but to see him going number one in the Rule 5 draft is usually like, that's a guy that somebody should have protected and didn't. I don't know if you have any feelings about Shane Smith, if you think the Brewers might have made a mistake there, or if that's still, you know, the White Sox just reaching big. I don't know.
No, I don't think it's a mistake by the Brewers. He was a name that was really on the fringe at the time of you know, the decision. And the Brewers can't make their decision based upon, like, the White Sox roster status or the White Sox evaluation. It has to be largely on your evaluation and the status of your 40 man. And now that 40 man's pretty crowded, like, there are guys, I'll say this, there are guys on the 40 man I would probably take Shane Smith over right now, but this 40 man ain't going to be the same in March as it is now. So some of those guys will inevitably get DFA'd or cut or released or traded or whatnot. So I think it's interesting that the White Sox did take him first, like you mentioned, because there's a starter chance in there. He was moved to that role last year and the stuff still worked to a solid degree. So the White Sox are in a spot where they can take a guy like that and give him a chance in different roles. So that makes some sense for them. Whereas the Brewers, like, I've been interested in Shane Smith's profile for sure, like, more as a reliever for this team, because their player development is at a spot where they just have lots of guys in a similar vein. Who knows? Maybe Shane Smith turns out better than all of them. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's back in Milwaukee by a couple months into the season and back in their farm system. But, like, they have just produced a lot of similar type arms, and it's not. Yeah, I don't think the Brewers messed up or anything by not adding him to the 40 man. But they could have, and I wouldn't have been. You know, I wouldn't have been sitting here saying that. That makes no sense.
Anything else? Willie Adames, by the way, just had his press conference with the San Francisco Giants. He, of course, got the mega deal in the offseason here. Good for him. He got his bag. Brewers, of course, were preparing for that eventuality. Some minor leaguers, that are, you know, Anthony Siegler, maybe Grant Wolfram. We mentioned him. Some newcomers under the radar signings by the Brewers. Anything else jump out at you here that you want to highlight before I let you go?
I mean, like, the Brewers save a little money by getting some cash back from the Yankees. They're not giving themselves a lot of room to operate this winter, but I still feel like they need to go get another infielder.
Yeah.
They have to. You have to. Maybe they trade for one. Maybe.
Yeah. And Alex Bregman is not going to fit into their price range, unfortunately.
Not in this market, folks.
He's still the guy. He is still the guy, just like Matt Chapman was last year. But I don't know if the Brewers can.
It's been very fun to see, like, how much the Yankees are pushing, how hard they're trying after missing out on Soto. It's like, oh yeah, we're in on Devin Williams, and they got him. I mean, they are trying. We want Kyle Tucker, and they very might well should get him too, and they could. Who else? Like, we're in on Bregman. We're in on. They signed Fried. There's just other names coming in. Like,
yeah, Brewers fans could totally relate to the try-hard Olympics that seems to go on these off seasons. But they got to get creative, and this was I wouldn't say completely creative, but this was certainly a move that will have some reverberations into the offseason, and then, of course, into the season. Devin Williams, no longer a Milwaukee Brewer. Hope you enjoyed this emergency edition of Micro Brew. Find everything we have on the deal and more at jsonline.com. His colleague Todd Rosiak will keep bringing you updates as the offseason rolls along. We'll be back with you soon enough, I'm sure, when they sign Alex Bregman, and we'll be back then. Thanks for joining me, Kurt. Talk to you again soon.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.